Blog Talk Radio.
Right, don't get the peace out if you don't mean it from your heart. Oh, never mind. I'm getting ready to go right in, but we need to start first. Start right. I'm Citizen Payne. Starting a little late. Tried to log in from another source, but that wasn't working. What's up, everybody? This is K's Son and Friends. We're back. I'm Citizen Payne, K's Son, the Friends, Wayne Gilman, Byron Saunders, and the Tale of Two Trials. Tale of two trials over the last two, since the last time we talked. We didn't talk last week, we're talking this week, and it's the tale of two trials. How ironic it is, right? In the one trial, you had the young white dude convicted or charged with shooting three other young white dudes, killing two, injuring one, and getting off. In the other trial, you had three white men accused of killing a black guy, and they all went to jail with a majority white jury. Very interesting. As was the case in the Rittenhouse trial, majority white jury. What's the difference? I don't know. A number of differences, I think, personally for me. And, of course, the fellows are going to jump in with their opinions as well. Just watching the trial of the three, and I was going to try to find something to call those guys, men. I guess you could call them men. The three men who killed Ahmaud Arbery. The trial consisted of a number of women, white women. There was only one black person. I think that the mother strings probably tugged at a lot of the women there, and also it's pretty obvious what they did, and but you know, this is America, so obvious is not the order of the day when it comes to black people getting justice in the United States. I hear all these people say, when is it going to stop? When are people going to stop? Or what is all this nowadays when we're going back to all this violence nowadays? Nothing has changed. It's all been the same. So when people talk about now we have all this violence and all of this going on and that, nothing's changed. There's some things have changed, yeah, but not really enough for people to be, in my estimation, surprised. Because when you understand, as myself and the fellas have understood, as we've grown as men and become men and young men and older men, that we've seen over the course of our lifetime, and I don't want to speak for the brothers, but I'm sure they'll vouch, that America has a serious problem with black people. And I think what happens with a lot of young people when they find out and they start dealing with this, they don't want to deal with it their whole life. You know, I don't know about Wayne or Byron, but I was like, well, by the time I get grown, everything will be okay. It'll be different. And I think that, and I've said this before, I think that many of the people, the young people nowadays, when you hear the frustration, like it didn't get done, and you have some even that are close to our age, like, we didn't do it. We didn't get nothing done. Da, da, da. Yeah, we got a lot done. But you realize that the task at hand, the struggle continues. There's a reason why the old folks used to say that, why that was a saying. Because this is your life. This is a struggle that we've been in and our people have been in for 400-odd years. So when we come along, and we hope that we're not going to be the one, those of us that happen to be parents, we hope that the next generation, or those of us that happen to be part of the previous generation, would hope and fight that the next generation doesn't have to deal with exactly everything that we had to deal with. And maybe there'll be a few incremental changes, as of course there were with our generation, as opposed to our parents' generation. Even as ludicrous and as crazy as it sounds, I was thinking about how jubilant everybody was about this, about these guys getting found guilty. How jubilant and celebratory, and the one preacher in front of the courthouse was down there doing a little, you know, born-again step. Celebrating something that should be commonplace in a democracy. Celebrating something that should have not, we should not have been worried about, right? We should be able to get justice. And so we've been so deprived of these things that whenever they seem to happen, the norm, the righteous thing happens, we get all like, wow, we won. I guess because we know that it never happens. But that's what I focus on, that this insane system, the entire system, when you have a lawyer getting up and talking about there's too many black preachers, and I understand what he was saying. Basically, that's what lawyers do, that they can influence the jury, but it is what it is. Understood that statement. But then when you go as far as to start talking about Colonel Sanders and Kentucky Fried Chicken, that really makes it obvious about where this guy is coming from and his perspective. Even if you talk about his interview, I'm talking about the lawyer for one of the McMichael murderers. Even when his interview, if you saw the interview with Chris Cuomo the last night, he was saying the Arbery's have a bunch of lawyers here. And Chris had to check him and said, it's the state. It's the people trying them. It's not them. But this is how these people think, you know. This is, they think that a lot of them, you know, I'm not going to say all, because, you know, for us to have movement towards freedom for everybody in this country, it takes everybody. So there's a large number of white people that are peaceful, loving, and also, of course, that are, I'm going to go say normal. And what I mean by normal, Joe, is that people who think that everybody deserves to have the same amount of rights that God gives to them. Everybody deserves to be able to self-determine their life as long as they don't infringe upon any others. And because the United States has been established in a white supremacist perspective and foundation, it is hard for a lot of people to understand that the status quo with which they've been living with all of their entire lives, all of their mammy and pappy's entire lives, is wrong. It's wrong. And I understand when you shake someone's very belief system to tell them that what you've been believing, what you've been taught to believe, is wrong. It's been a big lie. And maybe that's why some of them don't even want to consider the possibility that their entire existence, their entire foundational framework has been wrong. That's rocking someone to their core. And also you need to have the fact that some people want to learn. Right? Some people want to remain in their ignorance, and so they're satisfied, or they choose not to learn anything. I mean, just look at the QAnon people who are down in Dallas waiting for JFK to return to help Donald Trump be reinstated as president. Is that not the craziest shit ever? I don't know. I mean, for a community of people that have been brought up to think that everything they do is the greatest, most fantastical thing ever, I would suppose that that's not that far-fetched for them to start to believe in that, particularly when so many signs of life as they know it, the racist life that these individuals have chosen to live, is shaken by first a black president, then a black vice president, then, you know, so many black people on TV. You got black guys on a Today Show sitting with the white. You got commercials with black men with white wives and interracial families. And just, my God, it's changing. And so a lot of these people just lose their mind. And they do things like break things and burn down things and smash windows at Capitols and other places as well. Yeah. So, yeah, that's what happens when people's very core is shaken. Man, that must be really something to try and annihilate and exterminate a people like they tried to also do the Native Americans, you know. If you guys were watching, I'm sure probably Byron was watching Joy Reid tonight when she spoke about the Native Americans' version, what they think of Thanksgiving, which is the complete opposite. And the real history of Thanksgiving, because they weren't initially invited to sit down with the people that they saved and showed them how to survive. They weren't initially invited over there. But, you know, this is American. You see all these books about the pilgrims and making stuff up. It's a made-up society. So whenever some stuff in this fiction that we're living a lot of times seems too unbelievable, just remember that a lot of it is based on a made-up history, a made-up narrative. And as Joy Reid talked about, that what they would do was take the Indian children and try to assimilate them, take them, they would steal them from the tribes or whatever, try to assimilate them into the European culture. And I thought it's the same, interesting that they would, the same thing would be done to little black children, to try to assimilate them. Don't teach them anything about their culture. It's a devious, sick thing that individuals try to do when they want people not to learn about themselves. They must be trying to control them. Let's bring the fellas on because I know they got a lot to say. Bring Brother Byron Saunders in, the legendary historian. Brother Byron, how are you doing this evening?
Well, I'm blessed and highly favored, and I give thanks to Almighty God about justice, because I found it very interesting in the trial in Georgia that exceeded beyond common sense, is that first and foremost, when you're sworn in to take an oath, you put your hand on a Bible and you take the oath, I solemnly swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help me God. And at that point, God was brought into the court itself. So to have a defense attorney stand up and reference that men of God being there in the courthouse to represent God can't be in the courthouse. There's something critically wrong with the sensibilities of a defense on that line. That lawyer should be censored. And at the time that he brought it up, the most insane part of it, bringing it up, was that, yes, we all know Reverend Sharpton was there, invited by the family. Reverend Justin Jackson was there, invited by the family. It is their right to bring their spiritual shoulder in the house that God was just referenced, so help me God. And so at the point at which he continued along this line of thought, that he ultimately then referenced the one that really stepped over the boundary, was that he said, next thing you know, Reverend Ralph Warnock will be in here. And at that point, he has really exceeded his boundaries, because that is his United States Senator. And he is a reverend. And if he chose to be in that courthouse as the representative on the United States Senate representing the great state of Georgia, that he has every right to come into that courtroom and sit there and then up get at the end and say, sir, you have disgraced not only yourself, but you have disgraced your United States Senator. You have no right to be in this court. How dare you invoke both God and me as your United States senator. And he has every right to say that. Now, will Reverend Warnock say that? No, but it needs to be stated that he has every right to say that, because at this point, what game are we playing, ladies and gentlemen? And I'm glad 100 ministers showed up. They were there to support the God that you said, you'll so help me God on. And then to have the judge trying to take things away, to not allow certain elements, just like the Kenosha, it's an effrontery to our legal system that must be cleaned up.
So let me stop you. Let me stop you real quick, because both of you you've mentioned two things, both within the parameters, I believe, of the set parameters, organizational parameters of that have been used to execute white supremacy, right? The Bible, King James Bible, which many believe is the European version, even though God, Jesus, is described as a person of color within that very Bible. But it has been questioned that the notion of Jesus was based on, you know, Michelangelo and who he had as a, even the concept that it was really based on someone else. And that was that construct of Jesus and Mary was developed by King James and others who wanted to write the Bible and people wanted to tell stories about themselves. So within those parameters, still, there is the looming overshadow of white supremacy, in my perspective. Even the American legal system, which whilst it does claim to have justice, and in theory, the numbers suggest that you can get some sort of real justice restitution, but the way it is practiced and the way those tools are used have been in a systematic white supremacist perspective in terms of how they interpret the law, the discretion given to some people you just mentioned in terms of the judge's behavior. Certainly the judge's behavior in the Rittenhouse trial is perfect example of that. And one of the talking heads, the lawyers, made the very notion and challenged the very notion of white supremacy, that the fact that a lot of black people are assumed to be guilty and criminals because of what white supremacy has done in our country. So when you get two upstanding white guys, apparently, and they're going to stop a running black guy because the assumption is he must have committed a crime, that's why he's running. And so one of the lawyers made that, you know, predetermined bias that many people have and possibly that many white Americans might have towards black people because of the nature of white supremacy in the United States and the image and place that black people have been given in this society. I just wanted to point that out.
You know something, Eric? The one thing that is certain is that the prosecuting attorney gave a brilliant presentation.
Absolutely.
She debunked every ludicrous and legal BS thrown against the wall. Her tactic should be textbook and sent to that prosecuting attorney in Kenosha, because he failed as a prosecuting attorney to be prepared for the ultimate. He
right.
underrepresented the side, and I mean, this was textbook. And she is to be commended, because it needs to be, if the law is 90% legal, then the other 10%, the law must look like it's doing the law. That gives it the 100%. And our justice system has to come down on that factor. And the fact is, right now, we cannot let murder be mockery because a person can't be a victim. Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's half of it. Let's bring Wayne in here.
That's insane.
Yeah, let's bring Wayne in here. He's covered a number of trials, so I'm interested to hear his perspective. Wayne Gilman, the legendary newsman who's seen, unfortunately, Wayne, you've covered situations like this before during the course of your career, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. Nothing to the order of what went on in Georgia or even Kenosha, but I mean, I've witnessed things where judges have been unruly, they speak their mind, but I concur 1,000% about the political behavior of what was observed in Georgia and in Kenosha, because there's such a commonality. To me, there is a nexus between both trials with respect to the law. The way the law is set up in Wisconsin and in Georgia, it's geared in such a way that basically it only works on behalf of those who are defendants. I think it's, in all honesty, I felt that there would have been not a conviction in the case in Georgia. I was, I don't know why it was taking so long. I think it was like 3 days. To me, it was just as clear as black and white. But I have to go back to what happened in the beginning, when they were calling for jurors to be participants in this trial. It was clearly reported that they were looking for a bunch of bubbas to represent a jury, which is supposed to be a jury of their peers. Aubrey was supposed to have at least a jury of his peers there, It's just decadent that we have to put ourselves in situations like that, and there's no uniformity in the law across the country. And the behavior of the defense team, I'm not in the least bit surprised, because they set the tone from the very beginning. But I'm glad that the bunch of bubbers, and with the exception of the one black who was a participant in this case as a juror in the Georgia trial, that they, again, I was looking at the timing of it. I'm just surprised at the outcome, and I'm glad that everybody was convicted on the counts that they received. But at the same time, it just, to me, there's got to be a wholesale correction in the way the laws in this country are set up. In Kenosha, I know, I felt, because I watched that one more closely, and I think that's really, the judge was off the charts in his behavior, but just the whole scene and the laws and the things that he was able to dismiss and get away with, and the amount of money, the way they politicized this kid and made him seem like as if he was innocent. When I saw him going down the street next to state troopers of the National Guard with an AK-47 strapped around his chest, I somehow that snapshot, they kept showing it over and over on TV. I don't know how often they repeated it during the case, but had that been somebody black, and then he's been programmed. And basically, I think, and there's no secret that the Republican Party spent a lot of money to sort of give him some sort of behavior modification, that when he goes before the press, he's to say that he supports the whole Black Lives Matter movement. My thing is that what the hell were you doing there in the first place? Who the hell were you protecting? What do you own that why would your mother, I can't imagine your mother, my mother, any one of us being driven to a part of town, and I lived through riots.
The mother claims she didn't drive
them. Yeah, well, whatever she had, she was aware of what was going on.
Necessarily. You can't necessarily say that.
Well, I mean, the thing is, it's just at the end of the day, it's just that if I, I know that there's a culture, a gun culture in this country, but can you imagine at 17 years of age, and you're packing an AK-47, I don't understand how you get away with that. And I don't understand how state troopers, because to me, you could look in his face and see that he's so juvenile. Why would they allow this to go on,
Well, we know why.
It's just unfortunate. Well, yeah,
Your questions are rhetorical, obviously. I mean, we know
rhetorical
why.
Rhetorical question, exactly.
I mean, in terms of his mom. Go ahead.
I thought I had heard that she had actually driven him to Kenosha. I had heard that.
I heard that too. Then I heard that she didn't. So who knows? I mean, for all we know, we can assume that she probably did drive them, you know. But I mean, until
we
don't know that. All I'm saying is that we don't know that for sure. And in lieu of not sounding like everybody else that perpetuates shit they don't know, you know,
right.
That's the only reason I said that, because we don't know that for sure. So, and there's been some, and I only said that because there has been some pushback that she did not drive him. So, but said that on on another network that's known to lie. So who knows?
If that were the case, the fact that that's the one problem with that, that to me is the common thread in all this, is that other freaking network. And the fact is there's no legislation, there's no supervision. I watched an interview between Rachel Maddow and Hillary Clinton last night. And, you know, I mean, she hit the nail on the head. She has a book out. I forgot the title. But basically what she was saying in her observations is because, you know, the media is out of control, particularly social media and the media on the other side. There's no balance, you know. So people get to believe what they want to believe. They raise thousands of dollars. Can you imagine this? This kid was already flown from Wisconsin to Mar-a-Lago in Florida to meet the former president. What is that?
I can't imagine that. I can't imagine it. That's what that's about.
No,
I mean,
again, I'm being rhetorical in this.
Yeah,
the fact of the matter, that's what bothers me. And we got to be prepared for this, because if they could raise this kind of money and if they could groom him to be a White House intern or a congressional intern or what have you, you know, anything is possible. Anything
right.
is freaking possible.
And of course.
It just bothers me. And then the behavior in the Georgia case, they showed, and it's not really repeated that often in the news, but I saw it tonight, when she wasn't even arrested. She showed up, I'm assuming based on the tenor of her speech and the quality of her pitch, it was a female officer who arrived at the site of the Aubrey shooting, killing, and she was trying to anesthetize the gentleman who did the shooting. I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but you just called it a moment ago. You know, the son of the father.
She was trying to do what now? What was she trying to do?
In other words, when she showed up, he was still shaken by what he had done.
Uh-huh.
And they had footage of her, and not on camera, but you could hear her voice,
right,
sort of anesthetizing this gentleman. Well, you know, I know it must have been a lot. She, you know, right away, she jumps to conclusions. This black man with the freaking poor toenails, you know, had to be a participant in something that he had no business doing.
I see. So she was just saying she.
She was siding right. with somebody who's okay. been convicted tonight of murder.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
well, they tried to sweep it under the rug, the whole thing.
Exactly.
And they also let Ahmaud Ahmaud Arbery die because he was still alive when the officers first responded. And I'm only repeating this as I heard it on MSNBC News, that not by Joy Reid, but earlier this afternoon by Katie Turr, that he was still alive when the cops arrived on scene, and they did not attempt to try to give him any CPR.
There you go.
And they pretty much let him die, based on that assumption, like I was talking about earlier, that you know these two white guys are the ones that are the non-criminals. And the black guy laying there is the criminal. I don't know how they get to the thing about his toenails or whatever. I just think that's so completely bizarre. I saw one of the defense attorneys, the female one, talking about it and would have seen his dirty toenails. What? There's a sickness with these people. There's a true sickness. There's something wrong with them. And I don't know what picture she was trying to create about this guy's toenails. But that just, maybe I don't know the whole context, but as I try to think about and wonder what possible connection that could have with anything, I come up with a blank. What the fuck does his fucking toenails, whether they're dirty or not, have to do with the fact that he might have been jogging, or that saying that he was walking around? I don't understand that. And this is the frustration. This is what we're challenged with being black in this country. The sheer ludicrous bullshit, crazy ass excuses that these people come up with that make no sense, that are really, it's like when somebody, for example, I was in a business meeting. This is a perfect example. The person, one of the people I was in the meeting with, someone gave him some facts and figures that he just thought was just outlandish and unbelievable, and really thought he took it as an insult. That's how off the mark he thought it was, and he got quite insulted, as probably most people are when they feel that they're being lied to in such an imbecilic way that it insults their intelligence. And so some of the excuses and some of the reasons that these people come up with is so imbecilic and moronic that it insults the intelligence. It really assumes that I, as a black person, and other black people are really stupid. And it makes me think how stupid the individuals are that are trying to tell me that stuff. And the only saving grace that they have is that the fact that they live in a society that favors their bullshit. You know, as it does favor the bullshit of the very wealthy and the connected. And you know, now I'm not only going to break it down from a racial perspective, because, you know, like I said, we're not saying that everybody that we're talking about white supremacy, not saying that every white person engages or promotes white supremacy. You know, not saying that every white person is realizing that they're perpetuating and taking advantage of white supremacy, because this is what this country has done. It's brainwashed everybody. The people who are part of the advantage group and the people who are part of the disadvantage group, to think that this shit is normal, and it is not. And I guess they've done such a good job. That's why it's been 400 years, because they got everybody believing it. So, you know, Byron, you want to jump in here, or you sound like you wanted to say something? If you're still connected, I mean, you're initially quiet.
I'm still connected. Uh-huh. Thank you very much. I think ultimately Justice Department has to set the precedent of backing the law. We have three branches to our federal government. And if they're to operate equally, one factor that has to be setting the standard for all of the branches is to be precise and in adherence to the letter of the law, the Constitution for which they serve. When you allow those laws to be perverted, as we've been seeing, this is the result of allowing laws to be perverted, you get a situation where oligarchs are now trying to take over the government by buying it out and forcing itself into a right-wing, fascist, authoritarian-run government because they don't like democracy. One man, one vote threatens that kind of concept. So if you want to play, if this is a chess game, then we're playing it to find out, so what is the other side going to do now? Well, the other side has to do what is being done right now, is that they must adhere to the letter of the law. See, they try to bend the law with violence. Yeah.
Why must they? You're saying they must adhere to the, why must they? Because I only ask
if you're
going to
make justice work, like that, we just noticed, 90% of it can be all legal. The other 10% of it has to be that it looks like it's really legal. Because
so what I was getting at is that that there's some individuals who don't adhere to the law, right, as we saw on January 6th. We understand what the law is, and also, too, we put them in jail, but they have jailers who aren't going to arrest them and sympathize with them, just like on January 6th. Yet some officers are taking pictures with the people. I understand what you're saying. I'm just playing devil's advocate.
I understand, but see, their devil's advocate was that they wanted to start a war. They really took it to that level.
Right. Right. And so that meaning that they wanted to overturn the rules. The rules are only put the rules in effect and pledge allegiance to the rules as they work for them. And clearly what they've shown is that when the rules don't work for them, when that system they put in place starts to really do what it's supposed to do, that's when that, like you said, that other 10%, that interpretation where someone, that interpretation where someone could give their perspective and their interpretation of things, like the judge in the Kyle Rittenhouse and trial and other people who have, where it becomes their judgment, you know?
Putting the thumb on the scale of justice is nothing new.
Say it again?
I'm sorry. I said putting your thumb on the scales of justice has been nothing new for us for 400
exactly.
years, like you stated in the beginning. And we've been seeing it day in, day out, 24/7, 365, you know, leap year 366. So what's new? Make the law work. And if you
how do we make it work? I guess the thing
you
is
have to
I'm
set the precedent.
Well, yeah, you got to set a precedent, but you also have to do. I think what also needs to be done, like these school boards, like these other things, is that in order for a system to work, there has to be individuals who are of the system, meaning the populace that system affects. There has to be a fair representation of the populace controlling or working the system, because we see that the bias that one particular group or another might have can affect the mechanisms of the system, can affect the workings of the system when they put their own vested interests ahead of how the system, the purity. If you let the system work out in its most purest form, it's going to work out right. The scales of justice normally will weigh themselves out, right? But that's in its most purest form, in my perspective. That's when you have your interpretation or discretionary portions of the law where people can use their discretion is when you have the problem. So if you have people of all one stripe, so to speak, that are in that discretionary position, i.e. majority of judges when you get to the courtroom setting, i.e. Cops, the majority of cops on the street setting, right, white cops, going to probably white racist cops or cops that you have the majority of a white police force, maybe there's 70% that practice white supremacy, because I don't suppose that's not a far-fetched thing when we understand that at one point in America it was illegal for black people to even be free, and it was the job of the police force to enslave and catch runaway slaves. So we can fairly assume that there might be a large percentage of people that still are within that police force that abide by or certainly believe in that concept or principle. So then what we must do then is make sure we have an equal number of blacks and other type of people that are there in those discretionary positions to offer some sort of balance. Not always the case, because what happens when you do, sometimes you have people of minority descent that become part of this police force, and they do the same things, or they, some of them abuse the same power that some of the other individuals do that might not be a part of our demographic. So, but I believe it starts with at least some sort of parity or equality in terms of the people that are in those discretionary or decision-making positions.
When they look back on this case, the precedent of this case will have broken many of the molds of the racist policies and platforms in the justice system. Very much like the Topeka versus Board of Education. It became a very significant case, an iconic case of the forces of democracy, that it can be right. It can be made adjustments. You know, when you start pecking at the foundation of democracy, you may find chinks in the wall that will crumble because you're not maintaining the integrity of democracy.
Right.
And it has to
right.
start with the legal system. And so this case, because it is in Georgia, remember, it's about the two senators, both black and Jewish. They turned that state from red to blue. They're still fighting that civil war down there. And this
right.
is bigger than just the case itself, and it has precedent because the whole world is watching
And the individuals that are in charge of the elections down there are trying to be usurped, and they're trying to control the people are trying to control them. So it goes back to who is in the position in those interpretive positions, in those discretionary positions, like this guy, Brad, whatever his name is, out of Georgia. He was a stand-up guy. He was a guy that went by the letter of the law and catching hell from his own Republican Party for doing so. But we need more individuals. I mean, that's a rarity, as we've seen in America. I hate to say it, but I don't trust that there should be all one ethnic group. I certainly don't trust that there can be all white people administering a system of justice, because of the inherent disparity that I've experienced in my life and the evidence of it being in the 300 to 400 years prior. So once again, it boils down to, yes, the purity of the law and the law itself, but also who's in charge of administering the law, because that
decision has to be your Justice Department.
Department, but the individuals in it have to be a diverse cross-section of people there. It can't be just what you're saying is that if we just have the justice, if everybody does pure justice, and we can still have all white individuals administering that justice. What I'm saying is that I don't believe that that's possible anymore. And maybe it's a little disappointing for us to say that, but I can only go by the history of this country and the world. And I believe that justice is better administered when you have a variety of people.
Gentlemen, I just wanted to chime in here. I think that we've already gone through the process. I agree that there should be more miscegenation in terms of people who look like us, people who reflect America. But I think it's more than just the judicial process. We need a whole behavior modification when it comes to educating Americans as a whole.
Every aspect of our society, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Every aspect. Because our society is changing. Same way a pandemic hasn't occurred in well over 100 years, we are now going through a cultural pandemic right now that will hopefully lead to an improvement if we are to maintain a democracy in this country. But, you know, the thing is that there's so many warts that are being exposed. You know, it's like we've had two in our favor this way, the Georgia case, the preventing of the execution of the black man in Oklahoma the week before, and now Rittenhouse. You know, it's like a game. And if you watch the news cycles, it's almost as if, well, what are we going to do now to alter the course so at least the right would feel that they still have some sort of control? It's almost like as if they are going to defy what makes sense here. And they have been. And that therein lies the problem. You know, the fact that they don't want to even consider even looking at the 1619 work that our beloved journalist has done and put together as part of the curriculum for every school so people understand the truth. It's like what you said earlier with Joy Reid and the Native Americans tonight, exposing what they must go through every time we break together. And I embrace this holiday from a familial perspective. But when you stop and look at the historical perspective, it's insulting. It is insulting, you know. Right. And I'm of color also. I may not have the same tribes going through my bloodstream, but I could certainly identify with what they've gone through, you know, as a black American, a Caribbean American, whatever, you know. It's the decadence that is being shoved in our faces every night by an uncontrolled media system that basically is educating the bubbles in the world, unfortunately, from one perspective, trying to hold on to something that is sooner or later is going to crumble. You know, our numbers, we may only be 13% of the population is blacks, but collectively, we control the show here, you know? And we just have to see to it that we maintain and, you know, basically sell our... Eric, every week when we're on, you're always talking about how we have a need to sell our slurry as Democrats, this is the same part of the effort that needs to be told. We have to bring people who are uninformed along so they would know what's going on. You know?
Yeah, well,
it saddens me.
Well, the Democrats, you said that. Because the Democrats, I mean, we can't really, Democrats are the worst about selling their own story, tooting their own horn. We know that, and then you guys have heard me say that time and time again. Democrats
right.
that want to act like
it's
like
true.
Punk asses. But also, too, a point you said about the media, right? Fox, the only problem I have, I mean, they're going to tell their people what they want to tell them. The only thing I have is that they should not be considered a news organization because clearly some of these places that are going to lie and just make stuff up, they can't, I mean, they can call themselves whatever. But if there is some sort of a national or some sort of official branding of what's what, then certainly they shouldn't be called a news organization because of what they do.
How do you have a news team embedded in a Rittenhouse environment right after the verdict? Isn't there a standard of practice agreement within that network? How does that happen?
Yeah, they're allowed. I mean, that's what I'm saying. You can't stop people from watching them and from soaking up the BS. You can only hope that individuals. That's why I said certain individuals don't want to learn. You can't make that horse drink that water, but you can't make that horse drink that water. So certain individuals
right.
don't want to learn. Certain individuals, all they want to know is, you know, white people are supreme, and they don't want to deal with the truth or the reality that. You know, that you're probably not going to find one particular group supreme over anybody. As life is an individual journey, you know. But, you know, certain people don't want to know that. So that's why they watch people that are telling them what they want to hear, right? That's why they listen to they don't want to be challenged by any thoughts. And you can tell when you see some of these guys do these comedic things where they, you know, the one guy that likes to go to the Trump rallies and the Republican rallies and acts like he's really a real reporter and asks them these very basic questions, and you could just see the idiotic answers, as you can see idiotic answers on Jimmy Kimmel when they're out on the street asking people basic questions.
Yeah,
you know, the average
right.
American is uninformed, you know,
uninformed.
And they're going to get informed
exactly.
by who's going to tell them, and this is where the Democrats always fall down. Washington Post headline today that the jobs claims dropped to 199,000 last week, they said it was the lowest in 50 years. I don't see any Democrats saying that on all the TV shows. That's what I'm talking about.
And the president, and
he's
agree,
quiet
the
too.
President has had two news conferences yesterday and the day before and has not mentioned it one
right,
bit.
So, And I saw one guest on Joy's show, which hit the nail on the head. He said that, you know, the Democrats, you know, we hear one complaint and we crumble. Like, yeah, we're not working. As opposed to, like, this guy was saying, like, what Ronald Reagan and Republicans would do. Like, yeah, you might not be working, but you're going to get a job soon. That's all you got to do.
Right.
But I think also the onus is when you're trying to be the responsible one, you can't resist, like I've said to you guys before in movies and stuff. The hero, you know, part of one of the unspoken rules of fiction is that the hero can't resort to the same tactics usually as the bad guy, right? Because it doesn't make him any better than the bad guy. Morally, it doesn't make him any better than the bad guy if he's doing the same thing to achieve his ends that the bad guy is. And then
right.
stuff like that changed, that whole narrative changed, because then they started allowing the anti-hero, the guy who was willing to do the stuff that the bad guy was willing to get the positive outcome, right? So there's that case. But the Democrats, you know, they're held to that old school thing, but they never really come out and say what they're doing. It's like I did something funny. It's like, yeah, man, when Trump was in office we didn't have a Macy's Day Parade in 2020, did we? We got one in 2021.
No.
You're welcome, America, from the Democrats, right? We didn't. In 2020, you still had those big ass potholes down Main Street in your community. Now they're starting to get built a little bit. Some of them are getting filled. You're welcome, America, from the Democrats. Come on, you know you got to talk some trash about what you're doing, as opposed to the idiot in Mar-a-Lago is taking he'll take anything to get any publicity. Right? Rittenhouse comes to visit him. He's a great guy. This guy's still look at me. He's doing all kind of backflips and everything. Exactly. I will bet you, now that he's in a position, but I'll bet you that Donald Trump, deep inside, wishes he never ran for president. Because before he ran for president, a lot more people liked him. Before they knew he was such a complete piece of shit.
Well,
a lot less people like him. You remember back in the day, everybody was feeling him. Before he started getting politics and jumping on Barack, Donald Trump was
right.
The man. People were feeling him. He was a celebrity.
Well,
he was a personality, you know. And and you can't say, well, people don't. They didn't have the opinion they got of him.
He wasn't as polarizing. Eric, all I could say is that I was a disciple of Wayne, the late great Wayne Barrett of the Village Voice. Barrett, if you look at the history of his work, he called Donald Trump 15, 20 years before he got to this point. He knew that there were problems within that family. He knew there were problems with Donald Trump.
I'm not talking about well-read people doing exposés that's going to read the Village Voice and all of those. As you know, those were kind of heady papers. And people reading the Village Voice were people who wanted to get a very kind of progressive perspective, but they were aware of events. You know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about that same crowd we talk about that the comedic guys troll at Trump rallies, the same motherfuckers that be at Jimmy Kimmel that can't name what the vice president looks like or the secretary of state looks like. Those people pay attention to pop culture. They wasn't reading Mr. Barrett's and all that stuff that you know. Let's try to put yourself in the headspace of the average motherfucker out there walking the streets.
Right.
And you, myself, and Byron are not reflective of the average American walking the street. They're not, you know, they're not sitting here watching.
No,
I
think the thing that I'm trying to say is that, and I think what you were trying to say, I should say, is that when Donald became very popular because of his television program, you know, that he was the man. He had written or had people write books about his
and he was popular
before that.
Kids were rapping.
Yeah,
He was popular before that. That's what I'm saying. He was a pop culture icon. And the facts about who he really was, the majority of people didn't know.
They weren't aware until they became either victims was exposed.
Right. I wasn't aware of him and his father's the Justice Department case against them being discriminatory until within the last year or two, or within the time he got elected. So his PR as a pop icon was intact. Now he's not that.
Mm-hmm.
Now he has to focus on his audience, his stream and view audience, and whatever. And I'm saying that I bet you deep down inside he regrets the fact that he won the presidency, because we know that he was just trying to run to raise his brand. He didn't really want to be president.
Expression. Unsafe, exactly. I was just going to go there, and I hope like hell he really feels comfortable as being a past president and that he does not seek the Oval Office again. I don't see how that could happen, but stranger things have happened since. So, you know, I would like to think that, and I'm so glad that in a way Biden is already sort of dropped the dime. You know, I don't know if everyone heard this, that he's seeking re-election, you know, when the first term is over. He's got a lot of work to do. And I'm ashamed to say this. I love Kamala Harris, but I don't know if America is ready for Kamala Harris in the number one position, you know? It's one thing to have that position and that power during somebody's colonoscopy, but it's another thing to have ultimate power and control, and I still think that America's got so far to go. I mean, if they couldn't elect Hillary Clinton, again, I don't want to, you know, throw salt in it. I think she's a great, and there's already a lot of pushback and speculation about, you know, what she has done, and I'm just saying, you know, she's done what was requested and required of her to have that position, and it's not over, you know. But the right-wing media would have you think, oh, she's not doing anything at all, you know?
Well, that's their job. But you get the last word tonight, Wayne. We're going to leave it at that point.
I'm done.
We're going to pick it up then. Let's on our way out, Byron. Brother Byron, why don't you give the peoples your last
okay,
your
my last words here. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Remember the reason for the season of a homeless child who was racially profiled and who became the Prince of Peace. Fill your silos with the harvest. Share your blessings with your neighbor. Once again, peace and love always. See you next time.
All right, Brother Byron Saunders, we'll talk again. Brother Wayne Gilman, why don't you give the peoples your brilliant party words?
Well, when I come back in my next life, I want to have the intellect of a Byron Saunders, but more importantly, keep the faith.
There it is, my brother.
Enjoy
That's
your holiday, Eric, and Byron. Enjoy
All right.
your holiday.
You guys, too. Right. I'll talk to you together. That's Wayne Gilman, the legendary newsman. That was Byron Saunders, a legendary historian. And it's a day of thanks. I don't call it Thanksgiving. I haven't celebrated it from that perspective in a long time. But I'm thankful for my family, for people that are true and honest. And thankful that we can all talk about stuff every once in a while, get together and exchange ideas and say what we think about the things. All right, and most thankful that my mother started me along this journey of being on the radio and talking about my opinion and things like that, and thankful for my family, my father, and as well. So that's it. I'm out, everybody. I'm trying to find the music, but can't find it. So we'll talk again on the next episode, everybody. K-Sun and Friends. All right, peace.